This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 1-888-408-6141. That's 1-888-408-6141 or tryzona.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's that time of the week. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. And our questions come to us via email, radioprogram@aol.com is the destination for questions. And with me today, as usual, Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. She's a registered dietitian and also possesses a master's degree in the field of nutrition. We work together on a daily basis, helping patients and answering questions and providing you with content for drhoffman.com. How you doing?
All right, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very well, thanks. So here we are. We're sort of making our way through the winter here in New York.
Yes.
And things are good. This week, it was interesting. Several interesting stories came to light. One was a really well-done meta-analysis on vitamin D and its effects on colds. You know, we know that vitamin D bolsters the immune system. We actually have some pretty good evidence on influenza on vitamin D. Mm-hmm. But until recently, it wasn't clear whether vitamin D could have an impact on colds. You know, I always take a little extra vitamin D if I feel like I'm coming down with something, and I recommend it to patients. And so there's a study that was published entitled Vitamin D Supplementation to Prevent Acute Respiratory Tract Infections, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. And they looked at a bunch of trials. Let me see. How many trials? 25 trials. And they rated them for whether they were good trials, not so good trials, scored them, aggregated the results. This comprised 11,321 participants. And what they found was, indeed, there was an effect. The conclusion, vitamin D supplementation was safe and it protected against acute respiratory tract infections overall. Now, it, of interest, and I think this makes sense, is the patients who benefited most were the patients who had pretty low vitamin D levels. When they got the supplementation, they got more protection than people who already had pretty decent levels, that kind of thing. That makes sense.
Right, right.
Because, you know, it's like if you're already wearing a belt, putting on a pair of suspenders doesn't help very much more.
Yeah. Great analogy.
That phenomenon in medicine we see a lot. Protective effects were stronger in those with a baseline vitamin D level of less than 25. So we consider 20 really deficiency, 25 pretty lousy. Vitamin D did not influence the proportion of participants experiencing at least one serious adverse event. Well, okay, that's whatever, side effects. Very rare anyway.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that anybody with a level less than 20 is definitely deficient. I know that you like to say that even less than 40 really is not good enough either. So, you know.
And I have to say that I, yes, it's a stark admission when an integrative doctor who's like a health guru admits to being something less than invulnerable. But I had a little cold. And I motored through it pretty well. And I know actually how I got it. It's like I went to work out with my personal trainer, and he had a bad cold. And, you know, I said, every time that I work out with you and you have a bad cold, you know, I give you the alcohol wipes and I make sure that you, you're not sneezing in my direction. I said, but we get a little up close and personal working together. I always catch a cold from you. So anyway, so I caught a little cold. But it was fun because it was, you know, that snow day we had? That was the very day that I was worst. And it's, you know, so embarrassing to sit with patients and reach for a tissue and, you know, just don't want to do that. I mean, if you're a lawyer, that'd be okay.
Dr. Hoffman, it's a cold.
I know.
I mean, if you strap hang on the subway, if you're out at the grocery store, it's hard to avoid.
If you get on a plane, everybody's coming back to these marvelous vacations.
They're
all getting sick as a dog because the planes are like a petri dish.
Yeah.
So anyway, what I did was I took extra vitamin D, not a ton because I already have pretty good vitamin D levels, but I took 10,000 for 3 days in a row.
I
took zinc lozenges to boost my, because I had a little bit of a sore throat. So I did, three, four zinc lozenges every day. I did Neti, which is like to clean out my nasal passages with something called Neti Clear. Clear, X-L-E-A-R, makes the nasal spray, but they also make Neti in convenient foil packets that you put into a Neti pot and you rinse your nasal passages. And the problem I have sometimes is the cold. I get through the cold and then my sinuses clog up. And then you get sort of like a post-cold sinusitis. It happens very often. I kept my mucus flowing and I kept the green gunk out by using the Neti Clear pretty faithfully, at least, three, four times a day. And I took some additional vitamin C. And I also took, as you know, one of our favorite things, which is the V-Clear,
which
used to be called ViraClear, but that, they're afraid that the FDA or the FTC was going to come down on them for making a disease claim. So this is called V-Clear.
Is that why?
But that's
because I think V-Clear is nothing short of a miracle.
Isn't
honestly?
Now, yeah. What is that herb that's in there? It's a pelargonium.
Pelargonium. Yeah.
Pelargonium.
Right. Right. African geranium.
Okay.
Species.
Please don't eat the geraniums.
It's amazing. If you start taking V-Clear, and I've experienced this firsthand on several occasions, not just one, at the first sign of, my throat, something scratchy, I'm coming down with something, it literally takes the symptoms away.
Yeah. And I found it very helpful. And I had 3 days of congestion and I was a little tired. I didn't work out. Well, the other thing I did was instead of going to the gym to work out, to run or bike or, get in the pool, forget getting in the pool when you're all clogged up. I just sat in the steam room, which was, sort of like I steamed the cold out, where the steam is mixed with eucalyptus in our YMCA.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to clear out your nasal passages and inhale deeply. And, if you got a little bit of congestion in your chest, it opens that up. So I kind of motored through that, and here I am,
terrific.
Doing fine.
Yeah. Terrific. Now, isn't there a rule of thumb about if the cold is in your chest, that you should avoid exercise during that time?
Well,
stuffed-up nasal.
You need to listen to your body. I mean, I didn't exercise during the thing. I did yoga, which is fine and acceptable. The yoga doesn't take a lot of exertion and it kept me limber and, loosened me up. And then, within a couple of days, I took a spin class and I did a core training class. I felt a little bit less than, like about 80%, and I kind of took it slow. Some people try to power through illness, and I think that's a mistake. I think you need to listen to your body.
No, it's a mistake.
Yeah.
And rest is important, and eating right is important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm preaching to the choir here, but, chicken soup.
Oh, I had a lot of that.
It's wonderful food.
Yep. A lot of.
Yeah. And getting back to the vitamin D meta-analysis, we know that vitamin D has been called the antibiotic vitamin now for several years.
Some people say Linus Pauling had it right. He was just off by one letter. he was always talking about vitamin C, but right.
And if you really think about it, cold and flu season happens during a time of year when our vitamin D levels are lowest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of consistent with.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is it we always get infections in the winter? Well, partly our vitamin D levels dip. There's actually conflicting evidence over whether cold per se causes the virus. The cold virus seems to thrive at moderate temperatures, sort of like 50, 60 degree temperatures. When it's too cold, it kind of freezes it out, and too high, it inhibits it. So I don't know if there's really truth to the matter of I caught a cold because I got a chill. You know, that whole thing. That's right. There's been some pushback against that theory.
Hey.
Well, okay, so that's about it on that. You know, and by the way, vitamin D isn't going to make you invulnerable. You know, it's just going to maybe attenuate the severity or reduce the frequency of infections. And we see people who, absolutely, as a chief complaint, as you know, some of our patients come in and they say, I get sick all the time. And the first thing I'm thinking of, check vitamin D levels, you know, and see what happens, because that's one of the best immune boosters we have in our arsenal. Okay, enough of that. Let's get to questions. What have we got today?
Okay, we've got an email here from John. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, on a recent podcast, I recall you saying that either grapefruit seed extract or grape seed extract was good for the heart. Which one do you recommend, and what is the difference between the two? Do they essentially contain the same compounds?
Okay.
John, thank you for your question.
Yeah.
The answer is no, they're not the same thing.
They're quite different.
They're quite different. Grapes, as we know, have been heralded for their medicinal nutritional value for thousands of years. This is actually from the University of Maryland Medical Center. There is wonderful evidence that standardized extract of grape seed may be used to treat a range of health problems related to free radical damage, including heart disease, diabetes, and cancer.
It's the proanthocyanidins that are present in the they're also present, of course, in pycnogenol. Some people claim that grapeseed is a cheaper version of pycnogenol. They're a little different, but they have similar modes of action.
Now, conversely, grapefruit seed extract is, the uses are numerous. It has general antimicrobial, some antioxidant value. Grapefruit seed benefits include, extract benefits include killing all kinds of infectious microbes, bacterial, viral, fungal. So not necessarily heart healthy, but it's more for, I guess, something like cold and flu season.
Well,
along with some,
or if people have candida, you know, the yeast connection, you know, fungal susceptibility, fungal infection, gas, bloating, indigestion, fatigue, feeling sort of toxic, and you know, that whole panoply of symptoms that we attribute to yeast, we might treat them with grapeseed extract. It's pretty potent.
Yeah, yeah. Or you mean the grapefruit seed extract?
I'm sorry. I'm adding to the confusion here. Grapefruit.
Yeah, exactly.
Grapefruit.
That's why John's confused too.
Right.
So grapeseed extract more for heart, high blood pressure, cholesterol, even chronic venous insufficiency.
Yes.
Grapeseed extract is good for edema.
Right.
Cancer.
Right.
All of that. And grapefruit seed extract is really more like an antifungal, antimicrobial, antibiotic.
Yeah.
All of that.
Yep.
And it's great to take internally to fight infection. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even treating something like irritable bowel syndrome.
Yes. Potentially if there's bacterial overgrowth.
Grapefruit seed extract. Yeah. Yes.
Grapefruit seed
because
extract.
It's so beneficial in killing candida, as you say. And if candida is the cause of any IBS, it's helpful that way as well.
And, you know, what's the basis for that in nature is that these fruits are rather sweet, and in a tropical environment, they would tend to develop mold or fungus. And so many, especially plants that grow in a more tropical environment that's very moist and warm, have strong antifungal properties. So the bark of certain trees, like the tahibo bark or podarco, bark of those trees.
Podarco tea. Wow, podarco tea. That's one of the first things to advise for anybody on a candida diet, podarco tea. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, it comes from the natural tannins that these, that is made in the bark of these trees, or in this case, in the seed of the citrus, which protects the seed, because the seed is actually, you know, wants to survive from the standpoint of nature and evolution, because the seed is the source of perpetuation of that plant. And if that seed is vulnerable to rot, then, you know, you're not going to get a successful subsequent generation of that plant.
Wow. Interesting. I'm looking at a little study here about grapefruit seed extract in killing candida. One preliminary human trial investigated the effectiveness in people with symptoms of IBS and eczema. So subjects received either two drops of a 0.5% liquid concentrate twice a day, or 150 milligrams of encapsulated grapefruit seed extract. And after a month, all the subjects taking the capsules experienced significant improvement in constipation, flatulence, abdominal discomfort, all of that.
Okay.
And some subjects taking the liquid experienced significant improvements as well. So there are different, like, delivery systems of grapefruit seed extract as well. Good to know.
Yeah, good stuff.
Good to know.
Okay.
John, thank you for your question. We hope that clears up the confusion. So for your heart, grape seed extract. But other things good for the heart, really, the most obvious ones, magnesium, CoQ10. Make sure you're on a good diet. Make sure you're at a healthy weight. Make sure you don't have hypertension. First line of defense. Then go on to grape seed extract, I would say.
Yeah, I think it's more, it's sort of ancillary and second tier to management of circulatory problems, but it's got a place. It certainly has a place.
Okay.
There's actually a related compound. I mean, we keep going on these segues, but before we leave this topic, there's a product called what is it called? Metasol. It's the oligonol product that we use, which is a lychee nut extract. And I wrote an article for, I don't know if it's going to be out by the time people listen to this podcast, but probably. I wrote an article about cold hands and feet, you know, it's appropriate to the season. And it's a kind of a comprehensive article about things that help cold hands and feet. And I'm not going to go through all those things because you can go to drhoffman.com and read the article, or if you're a newsletter subscriber, you will have already seen it. But the product that we're using has... it is said, compared to pycnogenol and grapeseed extract, it has more vasodilating power. It seems to be more powerful in terms of promoting circulation. So it's being proposed as a alternative to pycnogenol and grapeseed for the purposes of enhancing circulation. And specifically, there's some studies on Raynaud's, which is that cold hands phenomenon, using Metasol. I believe that's the name of the product. Metasol was no. It's the ligonol.
Oh, okay.
Do we use that, right?
Yes, the ligonol. But I think we replaced it with the Metasol.
Yeah, Metasol.
Product.
Now, it's also, it's interesting, Metasol also... and I don't necessarily know this is true, but another thing that it's reputed to do is to help with weight loss. It's it's a polyphenol, and it helps to support metabolism. So, hey, you know, while you're getting your Raynaud's fixed, maybe you'll assist your weight optimization program. Okay, let's move on to our next question.
Okay, we've got an email from Noel. Noel read your article, Dr. Hoffman, on 18 supplements for women with early breast cancer, which is actually part three of a series that you wrote. Noel says, thank you for your article on supplements for breast cancer.
What's his name?
Yeah.
What is his name?
His name is Noel.
Oh, Noel.
His name is Noel.
N-O-E-L.
N-O-E-L.
Okay. Okay.
Now, he says, a friend of mine has recently been diagnosed with ovarian cancer. We've been reading through the various studies together. But I was wondering, so much of your advice in the article brings together and succinctly articulates various evidence in the literature, but I wonder about the advice with regard to vitamin E and fish oils, as there have been other studies that have indicated that vitamin E may increase the proliferation, metastases, and that mice-fed diets deficient in A and E have smaller, less numerous tumors. Also, E and NAC and alpha-lipoic acid may reduce the effectiveness of chemotherapy.
Right. Well, I agree with that. Yeah, that's a separate issue. Is that I didn't so much issue. I mean, I think that in the face of chemo, we have to be selective about what we administer. But by the way, there's been some reassuring news on the radiation front. Is that when antioxidants are given with radiation, it doesn't appear that they lower the efficacy of the radiation. Also, when high dose vitamin C is given with radiation, it doesn't appear to interfere with it. So, all too often, oncologists say, "Don't take anything." That, you know, we never know. Who knows?
Because they, you know, they just don't know. We have to be clear about this. They say that because they don't know.
Right. Right.
Which is not the same as don't take that; it interferes.
Yeah. So it's sort of a non-specific, you know, caution, I guess, on their part, because their their bias is towards their conventional therapies, and they say, well, why muck it up with these things from the health food store that we don't believe in anyway? And you might as well, I mean, here's an excuse to tell you not to take that stuff, which we think is probably worthless anyway. But as to his questions about vitamin E and fish oil, I think what you're going to find if you look at the literature, and, you know, he's taken a deep dive because he has a relative with this problem. This is something that we do, you know, on a daily basis, day in, day out, week after week, month after month, year after year. And I have to say that in the field of nutrition, there is some controversy. And it's very likely that you may read some studies which suggest an adverse effect of a supplement where the preponderance of studies shows a beneficial effect. And I can think of an instance. I mean, I can cite studies that suggest that taking too much vitamin D is bad for you. You know, I mean, there are people who push back against that assertion.
Yeah.
Where there's so
and
much
I do
evidence.
Want to point. Yeah, I do want to point out to Noel about the vitamin E, because we, you and I, have seen this over and over again in the literature. Is they're often using one form, and that's the alpha, the alpha tocopherol. And that can be dangerous,
well,
as we know.
Let's a specific example. I don't know about breast cancer, but in regard to prostate cancer, there was a study that was disappointing on vitamin E and selenium, the SELECT trial, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the problem in that trial is they used alpha-tocopherol. And what led to that trial were some studies that looked at mixed tocopherols and the benefits in terms of prostate cancer. So it may be that they, you know, buried the vitamin E hypothesis prematurely by using the wrong kind of vitamin E, whereas, you know, and I looked at all the studies available, and, you know, I agree there's some controversy, but I try to make recommendations based on the preponderance of evidence. And there are even some studies that suggest that, oh, fish oil is bad. I mean, like in prostate cancer, one study that suggested it was bad, but the vast majority of studies they looked at, the well-executed studies, because I don't think that study done I guess it was Fred Hutchinson Medical Center in Seattle. That study was a poorly executed study on vitamin E and prostate cancer. Then there was the same outfit, Fred Hutchinson, came up with something and said that fish oil wasn't good, but they never tested fish oil. They just measured blood levels. They didn't look at the fish intake. They didn't look at the oral consumption of fish oil capsules. And then they concluded, I think somewhat erroneously, that taking fish oil was bad. Well, they never demonstrated that taking fish oil or eating oily fish was bad. They just said in some study, people who had a higher blood level at the beginning of the study, never rechecked later, had worse outcomes. Well, okay. I mean, it's hypothesis generating, but it's not proof positive that there's a bad aspect of that. And so many studies suggest that fish oil retards the progression of cancer.
Yeah.
So,
anti-inflammatory and the rebalancing of the omega-6, omega-3 ratio. I think this is a good time to remind our listeners that just because you're surfing PubMed and reading a title and looking at that literature, and just because it's been published, is not a vet to say it was done flawlessly, that the methodology was correct, that what they said they were going to measure was indeed what they measured. It's not the case.
Look at two of the biggest scientific debates that are ongoing right now with major public policy implications. One is, you know, climate change, global warming. And, you know, you can say that, you know, you can sort of take a vote and say, well, the preponderance of scientists believe in climate change. I think maybe somewhat a subset of that believe that it's man-made climate change. But there are dissenters who are respectable scientists. So this, that's not, yeah. even that, which is a pretty obvious phenomenon, is not carved in stone. And another one is the vaccine right. debate, where recently we had an amazing podcast with, you have to listen to that one, Leila. I know that you're so already,
you, I
know,
will.
You live and breathe this, so yet another podcast is, you know, it's like a busman's holiday for you, but you got to listen to this one on, in your spare time. It was with Dr. Larry Pilevsky, who's a good colleague of mine. And, you know, I have to say, I'm a vaccine agnostic. I mean, not inalterably opposed to vaccines, but when I listened to a lecture by Larry, or I would talk to him during an interview, there's some very troubling issues around vaccines. So that's another example of a major, I mean, it was such important implications, much more important about, you know, whether you should take vitamin E or not if you have cancer. This is a,
yeah.
this is so, such, yeah. it affects each and every one of us in our daily lives. The decision that's whether to have our children or grandchildren take vaccines, or in our case, you know, reach mm-hmm. a certain age, they want us to take more vaccinations against, mm-hmm. you know, conditions that develop as you get older. So,
right. Flu shot, shingles.
That
vaccine.
Isn't even settled science, and you know it's
pneumonia
perplexing.
Vaccine.
It's perplexing, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean that we throw up our hands in despair.
Yeah,
we right. examine the issue. We try to make the most rational decision possible.
Right, and I do want to point out the last thing, which was just the first thing we talked about in Noel's question, is that use of vitamin A, alpha lipoic, and NAC may reduce the effectiveness of chemotherapy. We do know this. And again, anybody treating their breast cancer or preventing another occurrence of breast cancer still needs to be under the supervision of a knowledgeable physician like Dr. Hoffman, mm-hmm. who is going to know that you're not supposed to be taking these particular nutrients while you undergo chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so many times when I see the patient after they say to you, Dr. Hoffman, if it's a cancer patient, you know, you've got two lists. You've got this is what you take during chemo. This is what
yes,
you don't
right,
take
right.
during chemo. And these are of ultimate importance that we have to make sure that the patient understands why and, you know, so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's also,
yeah.
and since this is not quite even precision rocket science yet, it's our best assessment of the literature that gets behind that recommendation. And the literature keeps changing, and, you know, I can modify my opinion when I talk to experts like Lise Alschuler, who is constantly doing research on the interactions between, you know, the chemo drugs and treatments keep changing, and they may have new implications for the supplements that we give to patients. So anyway, so we got to keep up with the science.
Absolutely.
That's
all right.
That's all the time we have for part one. I mean, we digress uh-huh. as we usually do.
Yes.
But your questions are thought-provoking. We'll try and address as many as we can in part two. And Leila, give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two.
Okay. My 88-year-old husband has atrial fibrillation. Does he have to take a blood thinner?
Okay. We will tackle that question in part two. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is our weekly Q&A with Leila. Thanks, Leila. We'll be right back with more of Intelligent Medicine.